Hello, welcome to Board Game Bros. I am Matthew Craig.
And I am Jeffrey Craig.
We're game designers in real life, and we're brothers in real life.
Indeed we are, and this is our podcast where we talk about board game design, and board games in general.
Pretty much, yeah.
And sometimes other kinds of games, but for the most part, board games. Now, this is episode 7 of our entire podcast, as well as episode 7 of our series on gateway games. Now, yes. Matthew, could you please enlighten me and the listener exactly what in the friggin' heck a gateway game is?
Well, a gateway game is a board game that is an introduction to board game for new players, as well as it still provides depth and interesting options to veteran players. So it also leads to many other board games as sort of an introduction.
So much like a gate at the end of a way is a gateway to another way, a gateway game is a gateway into board gaming as a hobby.
Pretty much, yeah. That's okay. The best way to explain it.
Well, listeners, you're in for a real treat, because today we are talking about what I think is both of our favorite games, as far as board games go. And
that's kind of presumptuous.
What, it's not yours? I thought you've listed it in at least your top five.
It might be in my top five, but not my favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. It's definitely my favorite. It's a brilliant little game called Seven Wonders, and clever listeners will realize that we are talking about the game Seven Wonders on our
seventh episode.
I was going to say seventh episode, but you touched the mic and I wanted to make sure we could cut out the noise. Seventh episode.
Hooray.
Hooray. So, Matthew, tell me a little bit about the board game Seven Wonders. Give me some history and trivia.
Seven Wonders was designed by Antoine Bauza, published by Repost Productions in 2010. It won the 2011 Kenner Spiel des Jahres, which we've mentioned the regular Spiel des Jahres before, but the Kenner Spiel is sort of like a spin-off award for games that, instead of being really really approachable for families, Kenner Spiel games tend to be a little heavier, a little more complex, but they still are awarded this award for sort of recognition for their quality. It also won many other awards, which, according to the publisher, makes it the most awarded board game.
Mm-hmm.
It also released four expansions later on throughout the following years, as well as a two-player spinoff in 2015 called Seven Wonders Duels. However, like we said, today we're talking about the regular Seven Wonders.
Mm-hmm. The regular Seven Wonders. Would you like to know how to play?
Definitely.
Okay, so the theme of the game is that each player is building up an ancient city, and each player's city is represented by one of the Seven Wonders of the Ancient World. So through drafting cards, players collect resources and money, and then they spend their resources and money to draft cards that are worth points, and they can also spend them to upgrade their wonder to obtain more abilities from their specific city. The game is played in three stages that are called age stages. Each age is the start of a new draft. So for those of you that don't know what a draft is, essentially each player is given a full hand of cards. They select one card and they keep it. In the case of Seven Wonders, you set it face down until everyone has made their decision. Then you reveal them and you perform any actions that any of the cards require you to perform, or you collect points from the cards. Then all the other cards that you had in your hand, you pass them to the next player, and the other players will be passing you a new hand of cards, which you will then pick another card from, play it, pass the rest, and this continues in Seven Wonders until there are two cards left in the pack, which you get to keep one of them and play it, and the other one is discarded into a discard pile. So to go over some of the cards that you will be drafting in Seven Wonders, the first age and second age have much of the same types of cards, and then the third age shakes things up a little bit. In the first and second age, there's five types of cards you'll encounter. There are resources, which can be either natural or man-made.
Mm-hmm.
There are economy cards, which mm-hmm. are signified by a gold border.
Mm-hmm.
There are, or I should say economy structures, because each card technically represents a building or a feature that you're adding to your city.
Yep.
The second kind, or the third kind, rather, is a war structure, which mm-hmm. increases your military strength. The fourth kind is public structures, which are like statues and bathhouses and places that mm-hmm. people in your city would visit. They are all just worth raw points. And then the fifth kind is a science structure, like a library or a school or something mm-hmm. like that. And the science structures, they grant you these special little science icons that increase in their point value as the game goes on. You collect more of them. In the third age, the second age has all the same cards as the first age. In the third age, they introduce guilds, which are like these super cards that are mm-hmm. worth tons of points, but only if you did very specific things in the first and second stages. And we'll get to that later. So when you're drafting cards, each card has a cost. And in the first age, a lot of the cards, especially the basic resource cards, have no cost. So you can just play them. But if a card has a cost, then you have to have access to the resources involved to play it. So the resources are clay, wood, stone, ore, paper, glass, silk. Each one of those resources can be seen in the resource cost of a card. And having access to a resource means either you have it on your in your city somewhere from a structure or like a marketplace which sells it, or your neighbors to the left and right of you have it. And in the case of them having it, in order to use it, you have to pay your neighbor 2 gold. There's structures that reduce that cost, but for the most part, it's 2 gold. So you have to have that cost. The exception to this is some cards, if you have them in play, you will be allowed to play other cards in the future for free. And so there's these upgrade trees in Seven Wonders, where if you're familiar with the game, you know that if you collect a card at the beginning of the game, then later on you'll be able to play other cards for free. So the whole point of the game is to collect the most points. I already mentioned that the public structures, the blue cards, they just give you flat points. The gold that you collect throughout the game is worth points. The other ways to earn points are from your wonder, which, by the way, instead of drafting a card, you have the option of upgrading your wonder by one stage. You start on a... No, I think you can upgrade them at any point. Or is it in order? No,
it's in order.
It is in order. That's right. So you have to upgrade them in order, and each upgrade has a resource cost as well, so you have to have that. You can earn points from your wonder. You can earn points from military victories, which is at the end of every age. There is a check to see who defeats their neighbors in military attacks or wars. And whoever has the most military points at that point in the game, if it's at the end of the first age, you get a point. If it's at the end of the second age, you get 3 points. And if it's at the end of the third age, you get 5 points. If you lose, then you get a negative point. The other way to earn points in the game is with science cards. There are 3 symbols that you collect through science cards. There is stone tablets, which represents writing. There's what's it called? Compasses,
yeah.
Which represent mathematics. And then there's sprocket gears, and those represent engineering. So at the end of the game, when you're counting up your points, you take for each of those symbols, you find out how many there are that you own, and you multiply it by itself.
So square them.
So if you have 2 of a symbol, that's worth 4 points. If you have 4 of a symbol, that's worth 16 points. So you can see how that can snowball. So
it's a literal exponential increase.
Yes. In addition, if you have a set, 1 of each symbol, you get 7 points for each set that you own. And then there's a couple ways to earn points from the gold cards. Not so much. They're not dedicated to any particular kind of points. Typically, they involve collecting different kinds of cards. So it'd be like collecting a lot of resource cards. We'll give you 1 coin for each resource or 1 point. Some of them also work for upgrading your wonder. And then at the end of the game, there's also the guilds, which are worth amounts of points based on, similar to the yellow cards, what you've collected, but also what your neighbors may have collected.
Yep.
And that's the basics of the game. Mm-hmm. So let's get into the design of the game. Or actually, should we go with the strategy of the game? Nope. I take it even further back. What makes this a gateway game?
Yep.
What makes it a gateway game?
So, gateway games, as we know, are good introductions to a concept or a strategy. In this case, it is hand drafting or just drafting cards in general.
Mm-hmm. And as an extension, reading your opponents.
Yes. Now, so Seven Wonders, as sort of fitting with the Seven Wonders theme, supports up to seven players.
Mm-hmm.
And I know games where you have to think about what every player is doing can get kind of intimidating. And Seven Wonders does this pretty well. Normally, in a lot of drafting games, it's sort of like a pretty good idea to at least keep track of your neighbors on the left and right so mm-hmm. that you can sort of predict where the cards are coming from.
Because you wouldn't want to pass them a card that's very good for them. You wouldn't want to be the one responsible for that.
Yeah.
And if... you also want to be able to anticipate what your person next to you might pass you next to plan your current turn.
Yes. But... it's sort of like an advanced strategy to think about every other player, but Seven Wonders kind of encourages you to only really think about your neighbors, in that almost every effect in the game only relies on your neighbors,
mm-hmm.
which is definitely a flavorful mechanic. I mean, if it's a bunch of civilizations in different parts of the world, it's like... makes sense for them to only affect who's nearby, but...
yeah, you're not going to have to worry about somebody all the way across... the other side of Asia or Europe or whatever. Yeah, you only have to worry about who's immediately next to you.
But in this case, it also helps to lower the complexity at the start of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And likewise, you mentioned the guilds. They can actually be kind of complex with their mechanics and scoring and everything. I like that in the first stage of the game, the cards are extremely simple,
yes.
with really one symbol on the cards, because that is the thing about Seven Wonders, is almost every effect is represented by symbols and not words,
mm-hmm.
so it does take a bit of getting used to, but like I said, at the first stage, it's just one symbol, and then second age, they start combining symbols. And then third age is when it gets to the really crazy stuff, but that's after you've had time to sort of dip your toes in the water, even if it's your first time playing.
Right, much like the cooperative game that we talked about in a previous episode, like Forbidden Island.
Mm-hmm.
It starts you out slow, gives you an idea of what the mechanics are in the game, gives you some time to figure out what your strategy might be without making it... too important to know such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ramps you up into it until the very last stage when you are pretty set in what cards you're looking for.
Yeah.
And you have a good idea of... you have a good ability to evaluate each card,
mm-hmm.
and which is the best choice for you. And that's a thing with drafting that is daunting for a lot of new players or people that haven't drafted before, is that you're given a lot of information right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You're given like 10 to 12 cards and you have to figure out just exactly which to pick, and it can be information overload, but like you said, Seven Wonders limits that information for the first round,
yeah,
just to simple basic symbols.
And so another part that I want to mention is sort of the way the wonders work. The boards or the tableaus that the wonders are on.
Mm-hmm.
So each wonder gives you a resource just by itself at the start of the game. And I think that helps get players to understand that resources are important.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that there's a resource that you start with, you kind of makes you think, why would they give me this over like science or war? You know, it's because in this case, resources are really important. And I think that since the game tells you that sort of off the bat, it helps get new players into that mindset.
Mm-hmm. It also shows you on your wonder the upgrades that you can make. And each upgrade costs quite a lot of resources, more than many of the cards in both the first and second age.
Mm-hmm.
You might expect to have two or three resources in order to build a card in the first and second age,
mm-hmm.
But with the wonder, it can take 3 to 5 resources to make an upgrade. So that also puts an emphasis on collecting resources. And having it show you in a lot of the wonders, like the Statue of Rhodes,
mm-hmm.
or the Temple of Alexandria, if I think I'm remembering.
Library.
Okay, I'm thinking of the Temple of Athena then.
Yeah.
Where you have to pay resources to collect war or pay resources to collect money.
Oh, wait. It's Lighthouse of Alexandria. Library of Alexandria is a magic card.
That is a magic card. Anyways, but like I was saying, it's like in Catan, where they have the structures ordered, road, settlement, yeah. city, development card. You know, it's sort of ordering the symbols as resource and then everything else after yeah. resource, which clues you into the order of operations that you should take in a game.
And the wonders are kind of nice, too, because it for a game called Seven Wonders, it's very enticing to build the Seven Wonders. So for new players that might not know what the general strategy of the game is, it does give them a sort of game plan for the game that they can at least follow to some extent. And then it rewards them well enough. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've been unhappy with a wonder's rewards.
With at least with a lot of the wonders like Rhodes, Rhodes has it, mm-hmm. the Hanging Gardens has it. And Giza, I'd say, also yeah. has it. There's a very clear path to victory
yeah.
and a very obvious strategy that a player thinks they should probably take mm-hmm. if they end up with that wonder.
Yeah.
So maybe as a tip for a new player, try and play those wonders first before you move on to
mm-hmm.
The other ones. Oh, I'd include... I think I might include the Temple of Athena in there, although
yeah.
it's a little bit more vague. But essentially, the Hanging Gardens, just right from the bat, says build science cards because
yeah.
I can give you science icons, science
points,
symbols.
Yeah.
Right. And then Rhodes gives you war power, so it's telling you, hey, build war power.
Mm-hmm.
And then Giza is just worth flat out points, but
yeah.
you have to have a ton of resources in order to complete it. So it's just saying hoard resources.
Yeah, and Athena gives you points and money,
mm-hmm.
so it is also flat points if you take it at face value.
Right, I think it gives you 9 gold, which is technically worth 3 points.
Yeah. Also, that is something else, is each wonder has 2 sides.
Oh, yes.
One side is simpler, the other one's a bit more complex in terms of the costs and rewards.
Mm-hmm. That's great for a gateway game because it starts you out simple. If you want
mm-hmm.
to start on side A, it's very basic. For pretty much every wonder, it's flat points, some special ability of the wonder, and then flat points.
Yeah.
In the case of Giza, it's all flat points.
Yeah.
But it's worth more points.
But of course, like we said, when you flip it over, it gets to more complex stuff. Like Giza ends up having 4 slots of just points.
Mm-hmm.
I think one last thing about it being a good gateway game. I know this is true with like magic drafts that I've done, is when there's no good choice, I think players have a hard time determining what the least worst choice is. But since there is always the option of upgrading your wonder or selling the card that you could draft by discarding it and getting money,
mm-hmm.
Since there's always that option, it sort of makes it so that you don't have to make this really awkward choice. You can just sort of take anything and then get use out of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So let's talk about the strategy and how you win at the game.
Yeah.
I will just say I played this game a lot, and my personal favorite wonder to play as is Giza.
Mm-hmm.
If I have the option, I play Giza on the B side, because most other wonders, after they fully upgraded, they are worth about 10 points.
Mm-hmm.
Giza is worth 15 points when fully upgraded. And there's many cards in the game that care about how upgraded your wonder is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a pyramid symbol in the game that represents you have to count how many times you've upgraded your wonder, or what level your wonder is at, starting at 0.
Mm-hmm.
And since Giza has that extra step, then it gets that extra boost from cards
yeah.
like that, which don't typically get drafted a lot. In addition, it encourages you to hoard a lot of stone and a lot of other resources at the beginning of the game. And that's
mm-hmm.
that's generally, even if I'm not playing Giza, my general strategy is in the first age to collect as many resources as possible. Mm-hmm. Because in later ages, you will be able to make any choice you want as to whatever card you're going to get. You're not kind of led down these paths. If you have to rely on the upgrade trees, it's sometimes that can be unreliable. Having just flat resources available to you is the best part, the best thing I could I could encourage somebody to do in this game.
And it also means that your opponents to the left and right of you will be more likely to have to purchase resources from you, which just makes your money economy way better.
Exactly.
Another nice thing about having four wonder slots is you can take liberties to just get rid of cards you don't want to pass that you might not need anyways. And it still helps you quite a bit.
Yeah, rather than converting a card into three gold, which is only worth 1 point, or a resource from one of your allies, you can instead convert it into 3 to 5 to 7 points.
Personally, my favorite wonder to play as is Alexandria, which it's B-side. It has one space that each turn acts as one of either one of the four natural resources, any of them. And then it has another space that acts as one of the three man-made resources. So in a way, it sort of lets you be really flexible with what you're buying later on. And some of the late game cards in Age 3, especially the blue cards, the public structures, those have some really wacky resource costs that just like require one of everything sometimes. So Alexandria is a pretty comfortable way of getting those, even if you didn't get the prerequisite sort of upgrade tree card. Now that is another thing is upgrade trees are pretty important, I feel. And that is something I like about the science cards is every science card is an upgrade into another card. So they're not just weird points. They do have value for people who don't want to score science. And it makes sense because, you know, it's researching other technologies. But I know there's one yellow card that has an upgrade path through the three ages that's really useful because I believe the first age gives you one of those, one of any man-made resource. And then it upgrades into just more and more economy. And I found that one is almost always an early pick in more than four-player games because I think it only appears in four players or more. Since some cards don't appear in three players or four players.
Right. One of the ways that this game is really beginner friendly is that the setup to the game, it gives you this large pool of cards. But each card has a number on it that indicates the minimum number of players that have to be playing in order to include that card in the deck. So setup, depending on however many players you have, is just looking for all the cards with numbers equal to or less than the number of players you have and then throwing them all in a deck and shuffling, and that's it. So it's easy to set up. Now, back to the strategy. It seems like we're both saying that it's good to start by collecting resources or have a plan for getting a ton of a good amount of resources in the game, and then later in the game figuring out how your upgrade trees work, where they might be leading. And I think there's a supplement in the box, like a paper that illustrates the whole upgrade tree. It's a little bit much, but you might you can go ahead and take a look at it if you want to try and devise some form of strategy. Either way, just once you have the resources and once you're have an idea of where the upgrades might go, you just sort of pick, at least as a beginner, just pick one color of card and collect a lot of that card.
Yeah, and honestly, this is sort of apparent in every just board game or game in general that has resources you gain and spend, is that economy is usually pretty good to focus on early game, as it sort of lets you do a lot of other things later on.
Like in Catan, you want to be spreading out and diversifying the different kinds of resources you're collecting, rather than just trying to upgrade your settlements into cities immediately.
And in Dominion, you want to make sure you get a silver in the first couple turns so that you can start buying more expensive cards.
Yeah, same strategy can apply here. And this is a good point to mention that, like, a lot of gateway games are introductions into general gaming strategy.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a little nugget into gaming strategy, is economy is king in the early game.
Pretty much.
Pretty much, as far as board games go. I think, shall we talk about, the visual design of the game?
Yeah, a little bit.
Obviously, the cards have these really bold, colorful fronts, that, very obviously telegraph what kind of card they are. The yellow cards are very yellow, the blue cards are very blue, red cards are very red, brown, silver, green, purple. And
even in the symbols denoting what resources or in military power or science you get, colors aren't really repeated so much. So you could almost get rid of all the art and just have colors and shapes, and you could still tell what everything does. It's that easy to tell at a glance, which is really nice in a drafting game where you look at your hand really quickly and try to decipher what the best option is among, you know, 15 or so cards.
And even depending on the kind of icon it is, they have sort of a unified appearance. All of the resources are signified with a symbol inside of a circle. All of the points, coins, and war power are all wholly circular icons.
Well, they have laurels.
And then the science icons are just free floating icons. Yeah. They don't have any sort of bounding circle.
Yeah.
I also like how they handled, even though it can be kind of confusing for new players, but how they handled the upgrade trees on the cards is about as elegant as you can make it. Without making it too obtrusive. Essentially, in the top left of a card is where they have the cost. And they'll typically have all of the resources required in one column. But if there's a prerequisite card that makes it free, they have that in a separate column. So it's an either or. There might be something they could have done to show that it was even more of an either or decision and not a both. But yeah, it's up there. And then in the bottom right corner of the card that upgrades into a new card, they have that card's name. So at any point in the game, even during the first age, you can get just the ideas without having to look at that upgrade tree. You get the ideas of where your card might be going. And I think it also, in the bottom right, will sort of signify what color card it is that it's going into.
Yeah, I think so.
Because some science cards go into war cards and public cards. And it's good to know.
If you're like me and you like to sort of stack up your cards when you have multiples of the same type, it's really nice because since the cost is at the top and the one it builds into is at the bottom, you can just sort of lay it over the one that builds into it, and then it has a nice little chain where you can just sort of look down and quickly see the order things go in.
Yeah, this is one thing Seven Wonders has up on Magic, is that they put the cost in the top left corner rather than the top right. And so when you're fanning your cards out in your hand, you can see all the costs at the same time, as opposed to Magic, which has them in the top right. So if you fan out your cards, you can't see anything. You can just see the names. I just checked, and it also, on the cards that upgrade into more cards, has some of the icons that would appear on the next layer of cards. So if a card upgrades into a public building, which gives you flat points, it shows you how many flat points it'll give you. And likewise, if it evolves, if it upgrades into green, it shows you what kind of science it will give you, and if it upgrades into anything else, so that's very useful, and that helps you plan ahead as a new player who's unfamiliar with the game. It gives you some good ideas. So what games are similar to Seven Wonders? There's not a ton of games that use hand drafting as a mechanic in the game, but we've played a few. We know of a few.
There's one that's really popular online, at least, that I haven't played myself, but I know of, is Sushi Go, a game where each player is drafting a delicious sushi meal.
Yeah.
And I've heard that one's even more bare bones and gateway-esque than Seven Wonders.
Yeah, I looked into it a little bit, and it seems like you're either assembling different kinds of sushi or trying to get, like, a special combination of sushi. But it, yeah, it certainly is bare bones. It doesn't use any numbers or point systems. Mm-hmm. As far as I can tell, it just has pictures of sushi on every card. Mm-hmm. And so you're just sort of matching up artwork to accomplish combinations.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's probably maybe even more of a gateway game than Seven Wonders, but Seven Wonders is just so acclaimed.
Yeah.
And it has that ability to get deeper into its strategy and get you start thinking about strategy that makes it a better gateway game for Definitely. Somebody who's new. There's also a game called Nevermore. Did you get a chance to play that?
No, but I watched you play it.
Right, and that's a game where you're drafting suits. But the game rules dictate, depending on what suit you've drafted, special effects that you get to have on your opponents. And the gist of the game is that you're trying to kill your opponents by dealing damage to them by collecting like daggers, which is one suit, mm-hmm. or black magic, which is another suit, while also protecting yourself. There's yeah. hearts that let you gain health, and white magic. But when a player dies, they aren't kicked out of the game. They're turned into a raven, and the raven still gets to draft, but they don't get to deal as much damage, and they cannot win unless they are able to deal a killing blow to someone, and they get back into the game. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting. And, you only get to perform an effect if you have the most of a particular suit. So what you draft and the order you draft in and what you pass your opponents is very important in Nevermore.
And if you look online and just look up card drafting games, you probably actually won't find many games that have the same sort of look at your hand and take some or all or one and pass the rest.
Mm-hmm. That's comes just in, hand drafting.
Yeah, it comes in many forms. One other form in a game that I love is in the game Millennium Blades, which is sort of a trading card game playing simulator. They have the representation of a card shop in the middle, and you pay for cards that are sort of on display at the shop, and since you don't know what they are because they're face down, but you know sort of what set they come from, it gives this idea of opening booster packs at a card shop, and it's pretty fun that way.
Mm-hmm. And then there's other games that you draft more like the NFL, where you see all the options before you
yeah.
all at once, and each player takes turns one after the other.
Yeah.
Instead of you having the limited information of what's in your hand and what you've been passing.
Mm-hmm.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to episode 7 of our podcast where we talked about Seven Wonders. This was the seventh and final episode of our Gateway Game series. We hope you liked it. If you have a difference of opinion on what you consider to be the quintessential Gateway games, if you think we missed one, or if you think that one we included was a little too complicated, feel free to leave us a comment on our social media or on a podcasting app if you'd like. Our social media is, of course, at BG Broscast. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter under that name. And we also have a website, which is bgbcast.com. You can go there, see whenever we post new episodes. We've got a blog there. Maybe we'll post some stuff there. We haven't posted anything yet, but, you know, we're keeping the option open. And if you are also in the mood for just visiting websites that I list the names of, you can check out entertainthegeeky.com. Our friends Chris and Roger run a podcast over there where they talk about nerd news, nerd culture, everything nerd. That's Entertain the Geeky is the name of their podcast. And if you want, you can also pick up our one-page role-playing game over there. That game's called Merle's Truck Stop in Maine. It's only $1. It's got a cool Halloween theme. Perfect for the month of February, if you ask me. All the money that we get from that game is going towards publishing our next game, which is more information will be coming soon. We're getting pretty close to having everything in line for this next game. We're really excited about it. Matthew designed a lot of it, and it's a really, really fun game, really cool game. We're really excited to talk about it in the future, so please stay tuned for that. Again, that was the end of our Gateway Game series, so next week we start talking about the real games. Next week you can look forward to us discussing the complicated worker placement game, Agricola. Stay tuned, everybody. Thank you for listening.